Page Yud, by you it's 10A1, Mishnah. Starting the Mishnah. It seems that the Gemara is going off into a different topic, but it's not really, as we'll soon see in the Mishnah, that the Mishnah is going to discuss these things. The Mishnah says as follows. Hatin Nadarim, let me just give you a brief introduction. There is the written Torah, Torah Shebiksav, page Yud, second Gemara, yeah. There is what's called Torah Shebiksav, the written Torah, and then there's Torah Shebalpeh, the oral Torah, which was handed down, transmitted generation to generation, until finally it was written up in the Gemara. Now many things you have in Chumash, you can have one line. Like, I'll give you an example. The Gemara is going to say examples. Don't do work on Shabbos. But we don't know exactly what that means. You know, it's not defined. Or many of the things the Gemara is going to explain, it says there are certain things that oral tradition discusses that seemingly have no basis in the Chumash. The Gemara is going to go through, and certain things have basis, certain things don't have basis. So it says, Het in the Dorim. The concept of releasing one's vows, like we do every Rosh Hashanah, Taurus and Dorim, releasing one's vows, Perchim Ba'avir, is like hovers in the air. Meaning it's completely unclear in Chumash. Ve'en lahem amashi yismechu, and they don't have any support, so to speak, from Chumash. Now what's the din of a Taurus and Dorim? If a person makes a vow, so the Gemara says you can either go to three people, a Bezdin, or you can go to one expert, you tell them the vow, they find a loophole in the vow, and then they nullify it. So that concept, as the Gemara is going to explain, the Mishnah is explaining, has really no basis in the Chumash. Because all it says in the Chumash is, if you make a vow, keep it. It doesn't discuss anywhere the concept of being able to nullify the vow, or undo the vow. So the Gemara uses the expression, Perichim Ba'avid, the Mishnah says, it's like hovering in the air, they have no support from Chumash. Hilchos Shabbos, the laws of Shabbos, Chagigos, and this is why the Mishnah is bringing this thing here.
The Mishnah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Chagigos, the dinim of the Chagiga offerings that we're learning about in this tractate, or Me'ilas, the din of Me'ilah. If somebody misuses, page Yud, in the second part, the second, I give it to. What is that? The second part. There's a din what's called Me'ilah. Me'ilah means if somebody by mistake misuses Hegdish. They take something at the base of Migdash and use it for personal needs by accident. They have to pay an additional fifth of the value plus being a carbon. So again, that is not mentioned in Chumash clearly. These are Rehen Kardarim Atulim Besaira. These are like mountains suspended by a hair. What do you mean, mountains suspended by a hair? Shein halachas mikramut. There's very few psukim and chumash that deal with it. But halachas merubas, there's an abundance of law. Because there's a lot of dinim involved in these things, the korban chagiga and the laws of Shabbos and all. So the Gemara uses the expression, they're like mountains hanging on a hair. The hair is the one pasuk in chumash, and the mountains is all the complicated halachas. Then it says, Adinim, monetary laws, Va'avaydis, and the laws governing Karbanis, Hataris Vatumah, the laws of purity and impurity, Va'arayis, and all the forbidden sexual relations, Yeshla Mamashi Yismechul, have support in Chumash, meaning there's more elaboration in the Chumash about these particular laws, Vahein and Gufi Teda, those are the fundamental things of the Teda. And the Gemara is going to ask later, what does that mean? That only these are fundamental Torah, Shabbos isn't. So the Mishnah basically is saying three categories of concepts. There are laws in the Chumash that are called flying in the air, hovering in the air. They have very little basis. Then there's other types of laws that are mountains suspended on a hair, meaning there's a drop in the Chumash and a lot discussed in the Gemara. And then you have, like for instance, monetary issues. There's a lot of discussion in the Chumash about monetary issues. There's a lot of clear-cut forbidden relations that the Torah talks about. So those things are gufi Torah, they are the fundamentals of the Torah. Okay? So that's what the Mishnah says. So now the Gemara is going to explain, what does this mean? What does this whole idea mean? Now, the Mishnah basically says that the concept of nullification of vows basically is flying in the air, has no basis in Chumash. And the Gemara is going to bring down a braisa with four or so opinions that show that it has a basis in Chumash. Because again, if you take Chumash as it is, when the Torah speaks in Parshas Matis, if you make a vow, the Torah says you have to keep the vow. Nowhere in Chumash, according to our Mishnah, is there alluding to the fact that you can nullify a vow. That means this whole concept of being able to do Ataras and Dorim, or nullifying a vow, is basically something which is completely oral tradition without any base in Chumash. So now that's what our Mishnah said. Now the Gemara is going to quote a Braisa that shows that there is a basis in Chumash, even though a little far-fetched, but there's a basis in Chumash for the concept of nullifying vows. So the Gemara starts, Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer, Eimer, Rabbi Eliezer says, Yesh lehem amashi yismeichu. The laws of nullifying a vow do have a basis in the Torah. Where do we see it? Because the Pasuk says, Ish kiyafli neder. And it says the word kiyafli shtei pa'amim twice. Kiyafli neder means, if a person will utter a vow. Because according to halacha, if you think that you're going to do something, there is no halachic obligation to do it. Even though it says there's a pasuk, dover emes bovavoy, to speak truth in your heart, the Gemara says that even if you think something, that you're going to do it, ideally you should do it. But there's no obligation that you must do it. The Torah says, when you make a vow, meaning you utter that I'm going to eat something, or I'm not going to eat something, you have to keep the vow. In thought, you don't have to. So the Torah says the word kiyafli when you utter a vow. But the Torah says the word uttering twice. So Rabbi Eliezer says, you know what the double is? Once when you make a vow, and once to undo the vow. So he says, even though it's a little far-fetched, but unlike our Mishnah that says there's no basis for it whatsoever, Rabbi Eliezer says there is an alluding to it in the Chumash. Achas hafla li'isir, one is to utterance for something forbidden, meaning making the vow. The achas hafla laheter, and one is an utterance to make the vow permissible. You know, there's an interesting story in the Gemara. The Gemara tells a story, and by the way, it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch, that it's proper that if you think you're going to do something, to do it. Shulchan Aruch talks about tzedakah. That like this, if you make a verbal pledge, you have a halachic obligation, you have to pay the pledge, the tzedakah. If you think the pledge, so it says, there's no mandatory obligation, you have to give it, but it's proper to give it. And they quote this pasuk that we learn, Dover emes bilvavi, to speak truth in your heart. But the Gemara tells a story, there's once a Jew davening, one of the sages of the Gemara was davening, and a guy came to him to offer him a business deal. The guy said to him, I'll give you $100 for your stone. But the guy was davening, so he couldn't answer the guy. So the guy thought, it's not enough money. So he said, 150. And again, the Jew didn't answer. So then, the guy went up to 200. By the time the Jew finished davening, he told the guy, I'm selling it to you for 100. Why? Because when you said 100, in my mind, I was davening, I couldn't talk, but in my mind, I said, you know what? I'm going to give it to you for 100. So even though technically, the Jew didn't say anything, the guy went up to 200, so he could have taken 200 from the guy. The fact that in his mind, he thought he was going to take it, is enough.
Even a guy.
Even a guy. Yeah. Because in his mind, he made up, again, the Gemara uses it at what's called the Fnei Mishur Sadin, more than the actual halacha demands. But the Gemara is saying that when the Torah says you have to utter a vow, but the Torah says the word utterance is twice, which teaches us not only can you make a vow, you can also undo a vow. Okay? Rabbi Yeshua says a different source for doing Hataras Nedarim. Yud Amid Aleph, right after the Mishnah.
Right
after the Mishnah. Rabbi Yeshua says, Yeshlem HaMeshias Meichu, the concept of Hataras Nedarim, nullification of vows, has its biblical support. Why? It says in the Pasuk, Hashem said, Asher Nishbati V'Api, that God swore with my anger. In fact, we say this in Lechadaydi. Asher Nishbati L'Api Im Yevayon El Menuchasi. What does it mean? Hashem swore, this is what David HaMelech says in Tum, Asher Nishbati V'Api, that God swore with his anger that they're not going to go into Eretz Yisrael. Okay? Now, why did God have to say in the Pasuk, I swore with my anger? And if he didn't swear with anger, it wouldn't be a vow. So they say it teaches us that the fact that Hashem says that I swore in my anger, that he could change it. Even though Hashem didn't. They didn't go into Eretz Yisrael. As the Mefarshim say, the fact is, the Dor HaMidbar didn't go into Eretz Yisrael. But the fact, the language, meaning that a vow which is made under normal conditions, you could nullify. That's what Rabbi Yeshua says. Rabbi Yitzchok says, there's another source in Torah for nullifying vows. Yesh lama mashi yismeichu, the Chachamim have support from Chumash, because it says, kol nediv libay. Concerning the building of the Mishkan, it says that everybody brought what they had in their heart. Right? Meaning they wanted to bring it. Which means that if you wanted to change your mind, you would be able to change your mind. How do you change your mind? By nullifying the vow. Again, this is all going on what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah said, Hataras Nedarim has no basis in scriptures whatsoever. So Rabbi Yeshua says there's a basis, Rabbi Eliezer says there's a basis, Rabbi Yitzchok says there's a basis, and then the Gemara says another one. Chananya ben Achi Rabbi Yeshua. Chananya, the nephew of Rabbi Yeshua, said, Yesh lo mamashi yismeichu, there's another source for it. Why? It says, in the Chumash, Nishpat v'akayemo, I swore and I fulfill, Lishmer mishpatei tzikecha, to keep the mitzvahs. Now, that, what does the person say? Because I swore, I will keep the vow. Meaning that if he doesn't want to keep the vow, he can undo the vow. So these are all alluding to the fact in Chumash that there is a hint, at least in Chumash, to be able to nullify the vow, not like our Mishnah says. Our Mishnah says there's absolutely no basis in Chumash of the nullification of vows. In other words, the Mishnah wants to show, the Gemara wants to show the power, so to speak, of the oral tradition of Gemara and Mishnah, that the oral tradition is so strong that even things that have no basis in the Chumash still exist in oral tradition. So now, all these four opinions, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yitzchok, and Rabbi Chananya, are all people from the Mishnah. That they found a source in Chumash for nullifying vows. Amar Rav Yehuda Meshmul. So Rav Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, meaning it's a statement. Now Shmuel was much later. Shmuel was in the time of the Gemara. Shmuel said, "He avoy hasam. If I would have been there when these people were presenting their psukim, amelohu, I would say to them, didi adifa midutchu. I have a proof better than yours." I mean, even though Shmuel is an Ameira, and these were Tanoim, they lived much earlier, Shmuel said, if I would have been there, I would have told them a pasuk, and I would say mine's better than yours. What's Shmuel's pasuk? It says in the Torah, Layachol Devarei. You cannot profane your vow. That means, you cannot profane your vow, but somebody else could. The Torah says, you cannot undo your vow. Right? That means somebody else could. Who is that? By nullifying the vow. Like he says, who ain't a meichel? He cannot undo his vow. Aval acher meichel amlei, but people, others, could annul the vow for him. Well, either Bezdin of three, or Yochid Mumcha. The din by Ataris Nedarim is an expert individual or any three people.
An expert individual besides himself.
Not the guy himself.
Somebody else
to undo the vow. You can't undo the vow yourself. That's what the Torah said, Le'achol Devari. You cannot profane your words. But somebody else could.
Is there a time frame for that? Let's say somebody has some intention of doing something. He doesn't want to nullify it, but he's hoping that he's going to be able to do it. But in the meantime, he hasn't. And if they take him, there's a limit to this way you have the intention.
That's your limitations.
Yeah, you never nullify because you have good intentions.
It depends what the guy says. If a guy says, I will never eat bread, then forever he's not allowed to eat bread. If he eats bread, he gets whipped. Because he went against it to act against the negative commandment. If a guy says, I will eat bread, I make a vow I'm going to eat bread. Now, he didn't say every day. As soon as he eats bread once, he fulfilled the obligation. Now, by when does he have to eat it? When there is no set up, he has to eat it. Now, obviously, if he died and didn't eat bread, then he got an Aveda. He can't get Malchus because he's dead. But in Indian, he's going to get the Aveda.
It's interesting.
Yeah, in fact, tomorrow's three Prakim Rambam. These dinim, the Rambam says it's no basis in Chumash and all the laws of vows.
Rabbi, what if they break a vow and eat something else or do something else that is considered breaking the vow? Is it the same sinful thing?
What if you do it for the better? We learn that if you do it for better.
No, the vow is either. It, the Gemara Mishnah says it's two which are four. In other words, a guy can make a vow like this: I swear that I didn't eat bread yesterday. And he did. Yesterday he ate bread. And today he makes a vow that he didn't. So he's also going to get whipped. Because it's a false shvuah. Or if he swore that I didn't eat bread yesterday and he did. Or he swore that he did and he didn't. Either way, or for the future. It's either that I will do or I won't do. Or I did, or I didn't. So in any one of these four cases, if it's false, that's it.
I will do, but with no time frame. What's the problem?
Nothing. If there's no time frame, there's no time frame.
Then he doesn't have anything and have to do it.
He has to do it
before he dies.
Yeah, but he doesn't have to do
He could do Ataras Nedarim and do the vow.
Or if he doesn't.
I mean, we do it here in show. People make these crazy vows.
The only problem in that case would be that God forbid if he dies. Otherwise, if it's continuous, because it says, I will do, and it doesn't say by when.
Right.
The only thing is that he should nullify it. Or if he intends to do it, then just leave it on. Let it be, right?
Yeah, but a lot of times people get angry, they make vows in anger, and then they realize that they don't want to keep it. By the way, according to, as we say in Ataras Nedarim, and Erev Rosh Hashanah, I ezan haga teva shenahakti shlei shepalmim v'lei hisnesi shehei bli neder. Any good deed that I did for three times, and I never made a condition, is going to be bli neder. Then it becomes a vow. Let's see, somebody did a certain religious thing three times in a row.
What's in a row? Every day, one a day, depending what it is. If it's starting Shabbos, comes with oil.
No, you can't.
Three
because you have to be matan neder. What happens if a guy made up, they're only going to eat, I only eat this shechita, let's say. And they did it three times, then that becomes a vow. Unless they accepted bali neder.
And if they did it without saying anything, but it was three times in a row.
That becomes a neder. I'll give you a simple example. A guy puts on a gartel, let's say, right? Three times for 3 days in a row. Yeah? And when he started wearing a gartel, he didn't make a bli neder. Whatever. So once you do it three times in a row, let's say, that becomes a vow. You want to stop? want to stop doing it, you have to be matir neder. Or you say really with the oil is the same thing. You know, it says in Halacha that it's better to use olive oil for Shabbos candles than regular candles. You know, our custom is not. But in Shulchan Aruch it says that it's better to use olive oil for candles, Shabbos candles, than regular candles. Yeah? So if a guy did it because he had no candles and he just had oil available, that's not, he's not doing it for Yiddishkeit. He's doing it because that's what he has. But if a guy heard, you know, oh, it's better to use olive oil, I'm going to use olive oil. So the woman, for three Shabbosim in a row, lit with olive oil instead of candles. And the reason she did it was because, in her opinion, or what she was learning is, this is the preferred way of doing it. And then after 3 weeks, she said, you know, this is so messy, I want to go back to candles. She has to nullify the vow.
She has to do it in front of three people?
Yep. And she has to say the vow. And they have to find the loophole. I'll give you this case, it was Shabbos candles, yeah? I mean, whatever, you said it. A lady lit Shabbos candles 3 times in a row with oil, so she comes to Bezin, she says, you know, I made a vow, basically, or I did 3 times in a row, that I'm going to, I lit Shabbos candles with oil, and I don't want to do it anymore. So the Bezin will say, like, why don't you want to do it anymore? Because it's messy. So the Bezin would say to her, if you would have known when you made the vow, that it would have been so messy, would you have ever made such a vow? So she says no. So that's a loophole in the vow, which the Gemara Amish just is like flying in the air because there's no basis for it in Chumash, even though Shmuel says that you cannot profane your words, but somebody else could. So that Bezin says, mutalach, 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 and that's it.
She has to be truthful about that part? When you say, like, if you would have known
it. Yeah. I mean, but you can have a million cases like that. People do certain things or eat certain things, that, you know.
So we're before the end of the year, all those things?
Over there, we say general text because we don't know exactly which vow you're talking about, you know. Yeah. But I'm saying, if a person today made a vow, they have to go and they don't want to keep it. They have to nullify it.
But what's general, right? You can do it anytime?
I'll give you an example. What happens if you get in a fight with your in-laws and you make a vow, I'm never going to go there again? It happened.
Just saying those words is enough. I'm never
going to
go
if again. A guy says, I swear I'm not going to there anymore.
Well, that's saying swearing.
You have to say, I swear.
I'm never going there anymore.
It depends. So you have to know. Did he mean an expression of a vow? Was it not a vow? You know, le'yachol devari, meitzis sasech tishma. So if a guy said, you know, an expression of a vow, let's say, so then the din is, they have to go and be matin. If not, they're not allowed to go.
Well, could you go before Rosh? You have to go
no, you time. Can't wait for Rosh Hashanah. You're supposed to, because if you know the vow, you're supposed to do that particular vow. Yeah. Yeah.
What if you didn't?
And the three people, by the way, it's interesting. It's a Bezdin that the Bezdin could be relatives. Like this, when you have a Bezdin. Huh? Not the mother. When you have a Bezdin. Well, it can't be women, by the way. When you have a Bezdin, normal Bezdin, you can have relatives. Either one rabbi to the next, or teeth. But this is not a problem. You could do it. Okay. Amar Rava. So Rava says, from all these 5 sources, he says the best one that's not refutable is only Shmuel. The last one. And what is Rava explains each one? L'kula isla pircha. Each one you could refute, except Shmuel's that you can't refute. Why? Because it says, D'im Rabbi Eliezer, if it's according to Rabbi Eliezer, thank you. Then what did Rabbi Eliezer say? That says the word yafli, yafli twice. One utterance means what you say, one utterance is what you nullify. So he says, Deem Rabbi Eliezer, if Rabbi Eliezer is learning it from the double expression, Dilma could the Rabbi Yehuda, Sha'amim, Mishum Reb Tarfin. Maybe the word mafli, mafli twice, is not coming to teach me that you can nullify the vow. Maybe it's teaching me something else. What? The Tanya, because we learned in the Braise, Rabbi Yehuda, Imi Mishum Rab Tarfin, Le'elam, Ein Echad Mehem Nazir, only none of them are, I'll explain this case in a second, none of them are a Nazir, Tzlinit Nenazidus Ela Lafla, because the only way you can be a Nazir is by actually saying clearly. What's the cases as follows? two people are standing next to each other, and a guy walks by. Reuven and Shimon are standing next to each other, and Yankel walks by. So Reuven says to Shimon, you know what? He says to himself, I'm willing to bet, so to speak, that this guy's a Nazir. And he says, if this guy's a Nazir, I'm a Nazir. And if indeed it is good, the second man is certain that the guy's not a Nazir, so he too vows Naziris if he is right. So the Chachamim hold, both are Nazir. And Rabbi Yudim, in the name of Rabbi Tarfon, says none of them are, because none of them ever said they're a Nazir. They didn't say. Yes, yeah, so it's not a clear utterance that I'm a Nazir.
What's a Nazir?
A Nazirite. You can't cuff your hair, you can't drink wine. It's in the Chumash. The guy says, I'm a Nazir. He's not allowed to drink wine. He's not allowed to cut his hair. He's not allowed to go to cemeteries.
He said it in a sarcastic way. He was saying, if he's a Nazir, then I'm a Nazir. Is that what he meant? Is that what he's implying?
The guy says, if I'm right, I'm a Nazir. He didn't say, I'm a Nazir. He said, if I'm right, it's not a clear... It's not a clear utterance. So the Chachamim hold, the guy's a Nazir. Both of them are Nazir.
Why both?
Because the second guy, he says, if he's right, he's also a Nazir.
One of them is wrong.
Yeah. But the fact is, then he's a Nazir, because he's saying, I'm a Nazir. But it's not clear.
Well, what if the guy they were talking about wasn't a Nazir?
Huh?
What if the Yankel wasn't a Nazir?
Oh, so that's what it says. If the guy find out that the latter discovered that the passerby was a Nazir, the first vower does not become a Nazir. Because he wanted to say, so to speak, that if he's, I'm so certain that he's a Nazir, that if he's not, I'm going to become a Nazir. But according to the Chachamim, he would be a Nazir.
That's the halacha then.
Yeah, because Rashi explains what the case is very simple. Two guys are standing, a guy walks by. So one guy says, if this guy's a Nazir, I am. And the other guy says, if he's not, I am. So because it was all like doubtful, if, then I'm a Nazir, it's not a clear utterance that I'm a Nazir, he's not a Nazir. But sometimes, if a guy says, I'm a Nazir, and the second guy says, me too, he just says, me too, that's like he said, I'm a Nazir. And then he's a Nazir. But forget a Nazir. If a guy says, I vow I won't eat chicken, and the next guy next to him says, me too.
Is a Nazir a liar?
No. A Nazirite means, I told you.
Oh, man.
A ligner is a liar. No, so in that case, that's considered saying it clearly. But here you're saying, if, then I am. If, then I'm not. So then the Gemara says, the Rabbi Yudim Tarfon says, in the name of Rabbi Tarfon, they're not the Nazir.
If the Nazir lies, he gets whipped.
So therefore, the Gemara says like this, Rabbi Eliezer doesn't have a clear proof that showing that utterances you can nullify. Because what did Rabbi Eliezer say? The Torah says utterance is twice. One means to make the vow, and one means to undo the vow. So the Rav says that's not necessarily a good proof. Because if you hold one of them is to teach me that you must say a clear utterance, so then I don't have an extra one to teach me you can undo the vows. Both of them are to tell me about making the vows. So you don't have a clear-cut proof in Chumash that you can nullify the vows. And the same thing, Imid Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yeshua said, because God swore that the Jews are not going to get into Eretz Yisrael. And the pasuk says, God swore with his anger. So he says, Imed Rabbi Yeshua, Dilma Achikamer, maybe this is what Rabbi Yeshua means, Ba'api Nishbati. I've sworn with my anger, V'lo Yadrana Be'en, that's why I didn't take back the vow. That means, it doesn't necessarily mean that therefore you can nullify it. Hashem's saying, I swore in my anger that they're not going to Eretz Yisrael. In other words, why did Hashem swear? Because he was angry. How do you know from there that a vow that's not in anger you can undo? You don't know anything from there. And the same thing, he continues, even the Rabbi Yitzchok, Dilma lafuki medeshmul. Maybe the Rabbi Yitzchok, what did Rabbi Yitzchok say? Because it says, kol nediv libay. Whoever gives a donation of the heart. That means a pledge from the heart. Which means if you don't mean it. No, it's still him. It says, why? Because, Dilma lafukim it is Shmuel. Maybe it's to exclude the din of Shmuel. The Amish Shmuel says, Gamma belibay. Shmuel holds, in order to make a vow, you have to say it. If you think it, it's not a vow. And therefore he says, Gamar Balibai, if a person made up in his mind to make a shvuah, it's not a vow. Tzar Shayyati Bisvasiv, you have to say it with your lips. Because the Torah says, Kol Hayyati Mipiv, what comes out of your mouth, out of your lips, you have to keep. Varkamash Malan, and he teaches us, according to this opinion of Yitzchok, the Alpha Gavdolay Hayyati Bisvasiv, that even though you didn't utter the words with your lips, you just thought it, nevertheless, it's binding, you have to give it anyway. So how do you know that the Div Libay teaches me you can nullify vows? Maybe it teaches me that you know you have to make a vow in order to verbally to make a vow. Like we said before, according to Halacha, even by tzedakah, if you think a pledge, you don't have to give it until you actually verbally say it. Even though it's better, Shonar says preferred to give it, but you can't be forced to give it. That's what Shmuel holds, and that's the halacha. But this opinion maybe holds that even if nadva libay, nidiv libay, means that even if you just thought about it in your mind, you're also obligated to give it. So far we still don't have a clear-cut source in the Chumash for nullifying vows. And the same thing, Hananya ben Achi Rabbi Shmuel, the same thing, Hananya Rabbi Shmuel's nephew, it says, in the Pasuk, I swear to keep mitzvahs. Dilma, Kerav Gidol Amirav, maybe it goes like, Kerav Gidol Amirav, the Amir of Gidol Amirav, Minayin Shinishbo in the Kayim is a mitzvah, how do you know that a person could swear to keep a mitzvah? That means a guy could swear, I'll put on tefillin. Why? Because it says, Nishpat Ivakayema, I will swear to keep lishma mishpatei tzikacha, to keep your mitzvahs. Meaning as follows. We are all pre-sworn. In fact, the Gemara says that. You can't swear not to keep a mitzvah. Because you're already pre-sworn at Sinai to keep mitzvahs. So now the question is a guy allowed to swear that I'm going to keep put on tefillin? I would think you're not allowed to. Because you're already pre-sworn. What are you making a shvuah and a shvuah? I mean, stupid. The din is, because the pasuk says, Nishpati vakayema, I'm swearing to keep. Your mitzvahs shows that a person, to get himself more zealous and more involved in the mitzvah, is allowed to swear that he's doing the mitzvah. Even though we're already pre-sworn. Because it's a big chiddush, by the way. Because the Rambam says, and the Gemara says, there's something called shvuah shav, a shvuah in vain. If a guy swears that a man is a man, it's an aveira.
If he swears the sun comes out of east,
it's an aveira. Because everybody knows. Everybody knows. In fact, the Rambam discusses that the sun is bigger than the earth approximately 170 times, but not everybody knows that. So if a guy swears that the earth is bigger than the sun or whatever, it's, you know, in their perception, it's not a false shvuah. But if you swear at something which is obvious, l'moshul, it says in the Rambam, if somebody swears now, I swear that now is night. It's called not a false shvuah, it's a shvuah in vain. It's an aveira. Because you use God's name, you know.
Somebody doesn't believe you. I swear that the sun is bigger than the earth.
Oh, no, if it's a question of debates, you know, then it's not... Most vows, by the way, is when you use God's name in the vow. Like, I swear to God. Like people always say, I swear to God. That's why even, you know, when you get an aliyah, so when you make the mishabech, you always say, Bavosha yitim bli neder matana. Because it shouldn't be actual vow. You say bli neder because you don't want to make it what?
My question is there a midrash or a gemara concerning the destruction of 2,000 cities in King Yana's time because of these shabuas?
You're a scholar, Beryl.
Thank you.
It's a gemara, and Alt Rebbe brings it in Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, it says Yani HaMelech had 2,000 cities that were destroyed because people used to swear for no reason at all. Yep.
Did I pass you on history?
I didn't have you.
Thank God for that.
Thank God. I don't know for whom, but for, thank God.
I had his brother Jeff, who was a good student.
Ella, but he says, but the Shmuel... Leslie Pircha. Shmuel's cannot be refuted. Meaning, all the other cases, it's possible to refute. Shmuel's source of nullifying vows, because it says in the Torah, Lo Yachol Devari, you cannot do it, but somebody else could do it, that is irrefutable. So the Gemara says it's interesting. Shmuel was later on, these people were earlier. So he says, Amr Aviv Yisimir Rav Nachman Yisrael is a cute expression. Hainu Dami Inshi, this is what the popular saying of people. Tava Chada Pilpalta. One sharp pepper is better Mimilei Tzanda Dekari than a basket full of melons. Meaning, a pepper is small, but it's sharp. So the Gemara says, a little sharp pepper is better than a whole basket of melons. Meaning these were big rabbis of the Mishnah and big, and Shmuel was young, small, but he's better than those rabbis because all those things are refutable, and Shmuel's not refutable. What?
Don't look at the perfect corn. Break it up and see how hard it is. The old person.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The little guy, little rascal that runs around, nobody thinks he's of anything. That's what I know.
Okay.
What do you want from me for a little rascal? I don't have anybody here.
Okay, the Gemara says now, the Gemara continues. In the Mishnah it said that the laws of Shabbos are mountains suspended on a hair. Suspended by a hair. Meaning, there's so many laws of Shabbos, you know, countless tractates on Shabbos, and it's basically a few psukim and chumash. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? Mirtav Ksivin. Admonishments against violating Shabbos are written numerous times in the Chumash. What do you mean it's not mentioned in the Chumash? It is. So the Gemara says, Leitzrichna l'chad Rababa. I need it for the din of Rababa. What is the din of Rababa? The Amr Rababa, Rababa says, Ha'chayfet gumma b'Shabbos, if somebody digs a hole on Shabbos, Vein tzarech alel afra. But he doesn't dig it for the hole. He digs it for the earth. Potter aleha, he's potter from it. What does it mean? The Gemara is going to explain the concept of Shabbos. This is what's called malacha shein yitzricha l'gufa. The malacha that you don't need for the purpose of what the normal malacha is intended, which means like this: digging a hole on Shabbos is forbidden. Because it's called construction. It's called construction. How do you build? You have to dig a hole to build. So it's part of the building process. What do you want when you dig the hole? You want the hole. So the malacha of digging on Shabbos, biblically, is only when you dig a hole because you want a hole. What happens if a guy digs a hole not because he wants the hole? The guy needs dirt. If he can get dirt somewhere else, he's not going to dig the hole. But how else can he get the dirt? He has to dig a hole. So he's digging a hole not because he wants the hole, but he wants the earth. So we'll see, there's an argument to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says it's not biblically chayiv in Shabbos.
So when you want to break up a can of pickles, you don't want a can.
No, it's still rabbinically forbidden. With quite biblically forbidden. And the Gemara is going to explain why in a few minutes. But there's a concept of, and this, the Gemara says, is what the Torah doesn't talk about. Yeah, the Torah says, if you desecrate Shabbos, you get this punishment and that punishment, and don't desecrate Shabbos or whatever. But the Torah doesn't discuss the concept of what the definition of work is. Meaning, the Torah doesn't say that the only time you're biblically forbidden to do a melacha on Shabbos is if you do it for the intent of the melacha. So this is one case that's brought down, that you make a hole not because you want the hole, which is the melacha, you want it because you want the you need the earth. And that's what the Gemara says. Amar Rababa. Rababa says this is needed for a chefer guma b'Shabbos. But somebody digs a hole in his house or courtyard on Shabbos. And what's the din? I'll give you another example that the Gemara brings down. What the Mishnah says. There's another case. For instance, Shabbos you're not allowed to carry. If there's no Eidav. Now, what happens if a guy has a corpse in his house? And on Shabbos he takes the corpse out into the street. Now, normally, what is the concept of carrying? Carrying is, when I carry from my house to the street, I want the object in the street. That's the concept of carrying. I want the object where I'm carrying it to. What happens if a guy has a corpse in his house? He doesn't want the corpse in the street. He just doesn't want it in his house. So he takes it out and puts it in the street. But it's not carrying because he wants the corpse where he's carrying it to. He wants it out of where it's coming from. So according to Rav Shimon, that is not the biblical melacha on Shabbos. Even though you carried from private to public or whatever, the fact that you didn't do it with the intent of the proper purpose of the normal melacha, it's not considered desecrating Shabbos. That's rabbinic of Muktze. Here we're talking again biblically. Rabbinically, it's forbidden. You can't, according to all opinions, you can't dig a hole on Shabbos even if you only want the dirt. Because rabbinically, they say you can't do it because you might come to do it to make the hole. The question is it biblically forbidden on Shabbos?
But the dirt on rock on Muktze too comes out.
Yeah, that's all rabbinic again. Yeah. But normally digging a hole is because you want the hole, not because you need the earth. So anytime you dig a hole with the intent not for the hole, but for the dirt, according Rabbi Yehuda holds Yechai, by the way, biblically. Rabbi Shimon holds Yepater.
If it's for destruction, you investigate it.
Also not biblical.
But if it's construction, then...
Correct.
The difference in them is the punishment?
Yeah, if you get stoned, you don't get stoned. It's a big difference.
It's for destruction as well as construction, or both of them are
biblically, anytime you destroy on Shabbos, it's, you're not chayef in the Torah. Why? Because the concept of melacha is constructive, not destructive. Now, rabbinically, it's still forbidden. For instance, if you break something on Shabbos, you take a dish, throw it intentionally on the floor and break it. Because it's breaking, you're not biblically for chayiv. Now, it says in Shulchan Aruch, if you're angry and you calm down your anger by doing it, that's called constructive Is that called destructive? And then you would be chayiv. So the Gemara says this is where the Mishnah is referring that the laws of Shabbos are mountains, you know, held suspended by a hair. And the Gemara, let's see it instead. Kaman, who does this go like? Kerab Shimon, like Kerab Shimon. The Amr that says Malacha Sheinet Tzricha LeGufa. And the way we're learning the Gemara now is a malacha which is not needed for the basic purpose of why the work is normally done. Your potter. Your potter. So therefore, this is where the laws of Shabbos are unclear. So the Gemara says, no, afilu temel Rabbi Yehuda. You can even say this goes according to Rabbi Yehuda, who normally says that a malacha sheinet tzricha legufa is chayiv. But here he would agree. Why? Hasam normally, he might not be doing it for the defined purpose, but he's misakin, he's fixing something. Hacha, in Rab Abba's ruling, you know why the guy's potter? Because he's ruining his backyard. Normally when you dig a hole, if it's not for construction, you're actually ruining it. So over here, maybe he'll be potter. Why? Because the bottom line is he's destroying, he's not doing anything good. In fact, Tesis just adds that any time you destroy something, minatayri yipater, even though in this case he needs the earth, so l'chayr is not so destructive because he's getting something good out of it, but we don't care about the earth. We care about what the malacha is. It's forbidden to make a hole. That hole that you're making is destructive, not constructive. And if it's destructive, you're not chayif in the Torah. It's forbidden, but you're not chayif. It's not biblically forbidden. You don't get stoned for it. You don't have to bring a carbon for it or whatever. So the Gemara says, "My kadorin atzulim beside us." So what expression is this? It's like mountains suspended by your hair. It says, "Le melachas machshavas asur teira," because the Torah says that what is forbidden on Shabbos only melachas machshavas means thought which is calculated labor. Or melachas machshavas, and this concept that the melacha has to be written, like siva is not written in the Chumash. Meaning, there's a lot of aspects in Shabbos. I'll give you another example. What happens if you want to do something and your work wasn't done?
Kind of wait for Shabbos to be over.
No, I'm saying you wanted to carry 4 cubits, but you only carried 2. Whatever, yeah. So the fact that it wasn't done with your kavana, and it wasn't, so then it's you're not chayiv. Okay, it's the whole thing over here in Ashen Tesis, but anyway. So you have the same thing with extinguishing a fire in Shabbos. Tesis brings on the Gemara that they used to do it in the Mishkan because they needed the coals. Notice, why do you extinguish a fire? Because you need the oil. You don't want to use up all the oil. So what happens if somebody does it, not to save the oil, but that somebody should be able to sleep? So again, it's not the real intent of the original purpose of the malach of extinguishing a fire is to save the coals or the oil. So that, again, it's rabbinically forbidden. Okay? Most Rishonim Paskin like Reb Shimon, that malach Hashem Yitzich L'Gufa is potter, the Rambam Paskin like Reb Yudah, that is chayiv. But the Rambam basically is like one of the few only ones that do it.
Rabbi, somebody as halig as you are, yeah. I'm being funny now, are you ever excused if you're supposed to be carrying 4 big stones or something and you only carry 2 and you still want to carry the other 2 to fix up your wall and you carry it during Shabbos, 2 and 2? Are you excused or are you...
No, it's still called carrying.
Yeah?
Yeah. Nobody gets out of this.
It's a shame.
Now, so Rashi explains, where do we learn out that by Shabbos you need Milachas Machshavas? Where do we see that you need, that on Shabbos you have to need the proper Machshava, that your intent was fulfilled for the Malacha? We don't learn it out from Shabbos. Shabbos, the laws of Shabbos are put next to the construction of the Mishkan. By the Mishkan it says, Velachshiv Machshavas, to think. You know, they have to figure out how to do things in the Mishkan. So because by the Mishkan it says the word thought, and the laws of Shabbos are put next to the Mishkan, so we learn out that by Shabbos, in order to be Chayiv, you need to have what's called Malachas Machshavas. It needs to be the intent of doing the Malacha, and the intent of the reason why the Malacha is normally done. That's why if somebody did something, and they didn't realize what they're doing, they're not Chayiv on Shabbos either. Why? Because it's not thinking of doing the Malacha for the sake of the Malacha. So to give you an example, you walk out, you're carrying, you didn't realize you're carrying. It's a question, but you carried. Why aren't you Chayiv? Because it's lacking in the Machshava and the intent of the Malacha. It's not, you didn't have the intention of carrying the thing from here to there because you didn't know you were carrying it. So it's lacking Malachas Machshavas. If it's lacking Malachas Machshavas, it's not Chayiv from the Torah. You can't say Asa Tudor because it happened already. The guy did it. But that's the kind of Malachas Machshavas. Okay, so now the Gemara asks another question. It said in the Mishnah, Chagigas, that the laws of the Chagiga offerings are also suspended by a hair. Which means, in Chumash there's very little about it, but there's a lot in the Gemara. So the Gemara asks, but Michtav Chsivi, the laws of Chagiga are clearly stated in the Chumash. They are mentioned in the Chumash. So it says, Leitzricha, you only need it. That means this concept that it's hanging on a hair, you need for the din of Kur'amele Rav Papa Labaya. What Rav Papa said to Abaya, so he said as follows, Mimai dahay chagavah chagaysim eisei chag la'ashem. How do we know? It says in the, where do we learned before in the Gemara, from where do you learn out you have to bring a karm chagiga? Because the Torah says, v'chagaysim eisei chag la'ashem. You should celebrate it as a holiday to Hashem. So he said to him, how do you know it means a carbon? Celebration means a carbon. Maybe celebration means celebrate, get drunk. Where do you learn out that the word v'chageisim eisei chag la'ashem means a carbon? Dilma chegu chago ka'omer achmana. So the Gemara says, maybe it means you don't have to bring a carbon. Maybe it means you just have to celebrate. So the Gemara says, alameyati, you can't. Because it says in the pasuk, Meshin Aaron said to Paray, let the Jewish people go out of Egypt. Why? Because Hashem said they should celebrate for me in the desert. He says, Hachanami the Chegug Chago, are you going to say it also means just celebrating without a carbon? It can't be. Why? V'chi teima Hachanami. Maybe that's what the Pasuk means, that let the Jews out to go have a celebration in the desert. How do we know the word chagaysa means carbon? He says that can't be. Because Meshe Rabbeinu said to Parei, Vayem and Meshe gam ata titim biyadeinu zvachem ve'elis. You're also going to give us carbonus. So it shows, what did Meshe Rabbeinu mean? That we should go out into the desert to celebrate with carbonus. Meaning as follows. The Gemara asked the question. We're saying the laws of Chagiga are not, they're like hanging on a hair. It's not mentioned in Chumash. So the Gemara says, it does say in Chumash, bring a carbon. So the Gemara says, how do you know it's a carbon? The Torah says, celebrate a holiday. How do you know it means a carbon? So the Gemara says, because it can't be. Because another pasuk says, go out to the desert and bring a carbon. How do we know over there means a carbon? Because Meshe Rabbeinu says to Paray, you have to give us the animals to bring sacrifices. So from there you see, meanwhile, from there you see, that when the Torah says celebrate it a holiday, it doesn't mean just get drunk and have a good time. It means bring a good carbon. And that's not clearly mentioned in the Chumash, so to speak. So the Gemara says, but Dilma Hachi Kamat, Maybe this is what the pasuk means. Ichlu v'shsu, eat and drink, v'chegu chaga kamoi, and celebrate carbon before me. So the Gemara says, how do you know it means, again, karbonis? Maybe it means, you know, just give us a lot of animals to eat. So the Gemara says, Lisauka, that doesn't make sense. Why? This is, as in the pasuk, Layolin chelev chagi ad beker. The fats of my festival, simply it means, the fats of my yomtiv should not stay overnight. Now, if it doesn't mean a sacrifice, what does it mean? The fats of my holiday shouldn't stay overnight. Like he says, V'isakadaituch, if you're going to say that the word choig means yomtiv, tarba lechaga isle, does a yomtiv have fats? The Gemara is trying to bring a proof that the word tochegu, the word chag, means a carbon. So the Gemara says, how do you know it means a carbon? Maybe it means, everyday sacrifice, just enjoyment. So the Gemara says, you can't, because the Torah says, don't leave the fats of the chag overnight. So it must mean the carbon, because there's no other fats. What the holiday has a fats, as the Gemara says.